¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Hey, Mama. Thanks for making all my favorite recipes.
Hi, Ma. Thanks for your unfiltered advice.
Hi, Mom. Thanks for always being by the phone.
Hey, Mom. Happy Mother's Day.
When you ship UPS Air at the UPS store, your items arrive on time or your money back. Guaranteed at no extra cost. Exclusively at the UPS store U.S. retail locations. Visit theupsstore.com/airshipping for full details. Terms and conditions apply. Send your Mother's Day gifts at the UPS store and we'll get your gratitude there on time.
Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good to have you in here on a Wednesday as we kick off hour number two. Derek Mason, head coach at Vanderbilt, coming up at 7:30 this morning. Last night, Predators with a 5-2 victory over the Sharks as they improved to 2-1 on the season. Capitals up next on Thursday night. And quickly as well, as you know, we talked about the loss on Saturday to Detroit and how Detroit has had a ton of success over the last 10-11 games against the Predators. The flip can be said about last night. The Predators now 10-1-1 in their last 12 at Bridgestone against the Sharks. Dominating victory.
Yeah, high-quality performance last night. Kyle Turris gets on the board. Roman Josi, a couple of goals there. Dutchie with another apple. I don't think that's ever going to get old. I don't know. If it's old with Preds fans, just let us know. But I think we find it funny. So as long as we think it's funny, we'll still do it, right? Pekka was great. Derek, you talked about Pekka in the first hour. Roman Josi probably deserves a contract extension. So I don't
give that's that one man of the, his money it's now.
I know you should take more away from a game 3 of 82, right? Power play did well. You know, the second line or first line, whatever you want to call it, looks just as good as it has all season so far. A lot of good positive things. Dante Fabro gets on the board. Just a really good, solid performance last night from the Preds. But the thing I took away the most was get 59 signed to a contract extension, because the more he plays, the more that dollar figure could go up.
All right, so we were discussing to wrap up the first hour of the show the differences between Mike Vrabel and Frank Wright, comparing the head coaches of the Titans and the Colts. And also we're going to get to something that, D-Maze, you think could come to fruition really soon this year as well. But let's get a call here. Tony wants to chime in on the Vrabel versus Frank Wright discussion, and the number is 737-1025 if you want to jump in. Tony, you're next on Morning Drive.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to chime in. I admittedly am a little biased. Big Maryland Terrapin fan, and I remember watching Frank Wright come back from 4 touchdowns against the Miami Hurricanes back in their heyday. But I think one advantage Frank Wright has is that he spent a good amount of time on the sideline with one of the best coaches of all time, with Marv Levy, you know, and he got to watch what a great Hall of Fame caliber coach does and learn from him. Where Vrabel, you know, he was under Belichick, it was great, but more of as a player, more not as much on the sideline observing what went on, that sort of thing. But that's just my take.
So your opinion is that because Frank Reich didn't play football, that he learned more from his coach while playing for his coach? I'm not buying that.
No,
I think his time coaching under Doug Peterson.
Yeah, I think that's
is a big plus.
I think
for
it's
Frank
a combination Reich. Of all that. You know, backing up Jim Kelly for so long, watching watching a Hall of Fame quarterback go about his business, playing under a Hall of Fame coach in Marv Levy, then going to Philadelphia and being with Doug Peterson. And, you know, we know Doug Peterson knows offenses and put together just about anything. That worked well in Frank Wright's favor. He took all of that, and now he's able to do it there in Indianapolis. It doesn't hurt when you have – you and your GM are on the same wavelength, and it's like, okay, let's build our offense first. Let's build our offensive line, because a lot of people laugh. Why are they drafting a guard so high? You don't draft a guard that high. Well, that guard is potentially he's trending toward being a Hall of Fame type of guard
right in
the National Football League. So they did what was best for their team. And for one person, their quarterback, how do we keep our quarterback upright? Well, we're going to draft an interior. Yeah. We're going to draft our line first. That's what Dallas did, and that's what Indianapolis did. And that's what the Tennessee Titans need to start doing. Well, they thought they had did it when right. they drafted when Mullarkey got here. Well, not Mullarkey, but Munchak. And they drafted Taylor Lewan. Then they drafted Jack Conklin. And then they drafted the kid out of Alabama.
Chance Warmack.
They were trying to build their team from the inside out.
Yeah.
And
Nate Davis third round this year.
Exactly.
I mean,
and it just hadn't worked out the way they thought it would work out.
Yeah, and listen, if you're going to give Frank Reich credit for being a coach in 2019 for what he did playing for a guy like 30 years ago, then you have to give Vrabel credit for talking with Coach Belichick every day on the practice field for a decade. I'm sorry. Like, if you give one guy credit, you have to give the other guy. He was coached by Bill Belichick every day for whatever, 10 years, 11 years. So I think that you give credit to both of them. I think certainly what's interesting is backup quarterbacks always make the best coaches. It feels like it's just there all these guys, and I don't know if it's – I don't think it's a playing time thing. I think it's just a lot of times you stick around as a backup because you're just smart enough and you know the game and you understand where to go with the football. And, you know, in a backup situation, you can be put in there and maybe not screw up the game for your team. And that's just sort of – that's what I like about Vrabel is sort of – you know, not a high-level draft pick, not an elite-level talent that he had to work his way into being what he was as a player. That's sort of the thing that I like about his background. I don't know. You look at these two coaches, and I still think there's a long way to go before we know if they're great or not. I think Frank Reich is proving that he's doing a really good job right now. And
He's trending.
Oh, by the way, they stumbled into it, right? They didn't want him. Yeah. He wasn't the guy they wanted. They wanted Josh McDaniels. Frankly, they wanted Mike Vrabel. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but Frank Reich so far this year has done a great job. Now, there's a lot of teams that start 3-2 that finish 7-9. So let's just see how everything plays out for all these teams.
Well, he started what 0-4,
1-5 last year,
yeah. And ended up making the playoffs. So he did a hell of a job at getting that team back on course. I mean, it helps when you have Andrew Luck, but still he found a way to get that team back on track.
You're also part of the reason they were 1-5 too. You got to take every win and every loss.
I think he figured it. I think what happened is because they could have easily been 2-4 with that game in Houston. They decided to go for it. I think he used analytics to the extreme on that one.
Probably right.
But
hey, Tomlin did the whole take the ball or take the defense in overtime.
Yeah, it was analytics
and
probably.
And it worked because they got a stop and got the ball back. Now they didn't win, but like. That's one of those weird decisions where you're like, why'd you do that? And then it actually looked like it worked.
But he has gotten, with this team, he has figured out how to coach his team. I think that first 5 or 6 games last year, he was still trying to figure it out. I think he figured out how to coach that football team.
NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show. You can start your morning off with the kickoff show from 10 to 1, followed by the pregame show featuring Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders. Live from the George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 1 to 3 before the Broncos game. The NFL pregame show brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, your Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. D-Maze, you had a thought about the future of some of the incumbents on this team with the Titans. We'll get to that next, coming up here on the Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 7:14, rolling on live here, Wednesday edition of Morning Drive. Nick Braden, D-Maze, Marquise with you. Derek Mason of Vanderbilt coming up at the bottom of the hour. But right now, Derek Mason of Morning Drive, you have some interesting thoughts regarding the future of one, maybe two players here in Nashville with the Titans that, you know, could be coming to a close.
Yeah, and when I say this, it's not that I think, you know, these players are bad players, because I don't. But I know how this league works. Played in it long enough, seen enough that I know how it works. Sometimes it doesn't matter. It's not about your play necessarily. It's a lot of other factors that go into it. And the two guys, and I mentioned it, I think, yesterday, and the two guys that I'm talking about is Jarrell Casey and Delanie Walker. Now, I haven't heard anything. I'm not saying that. No one's giving me the inside information or anything else. And, again, I like both guys. I think both guys are what you want on your organization. I've said it. I think, you know, on offense, I think the only dog they have is Delanie Walker. That's the guy that I can count on day in and day out to go out there and get the job done. And then Jarrell Casey has just been that staple in the middle. But they have better players surrounding him on defense than I think Delaney does on offense. But it can get there. They can have some good players on offense. I think the two receivers are trending upward, and the quarterback is still, I don't know. But the way the NFL works is, you know, you get to a certain point and you got to make a decision. This franchise, they're going to have to make a decision on a few guys. And I know Delaney and Jarrell, you know, got extensions on that contract. But that extension is worth about the piece of paper they signed their name on. Nothing. Because they can cut you after giving you that extension. It happened to me. They gave me a 2-year extension in Baltimore. And then the next year, because,
what?
You know, they had to move
no.
on. Yeah, they
NFL
they
players get cut before the end of their
exactly.
contract?
Exactly. They cut me, and they wanted to go younger, and they did. You know, they drafted a guy, a receiver that turned out to be a pretty good receiver. You know, and they just wanted to go younger. And I get it. And I understood that. And Torrey Smith, they drafted Torrey Smith out of Maryland. And he turned out to be a good player. But I think the Tennessee Titans are kind of taking that approach, too. They draft Jonnu Smith a few years ago. They draft Jeffrey Simmons this past summer. They drafted those two guys because they want them to be the heir apparent to the guys that they have now. Delaney's going to make it hard for you because he's going to continue to play at a level that I think is going to keep him in the league for at least another 4 or 5 years, possibly, if he stays healthy.
Could become
at
like the Frank Gore of tight ends.
Exactly.
Just sticks around forever.
Absolutely. And then Jarrell Casey is sort of kind of that same way. But I think they're eventually this year, after this season, they're going to move on from these guys because they want to insert Simmons and another younger guy. They want to have that younger guy on the offensive side of the ball because Jonnu Smith has talent.
Yeah.
The kid can flat out play.
Delaney's cap hit this year, $6.3 million. Next year, $8.3 million, but only a $1.6 million dead cap hit mm-hmm. next year, which I'm assuming that means if they cut him, they're saving themselves almost $6 million yeah. and some change, and he will be 36 years old going into next season. Listen, the problem is he still seems like he's playing at an extremely high level.
Exactly.
And that's the problem. Now, Casey is a little different because he's only 30 years old. Still probably the best defensive lineman on the team. Still one of the most underrated players. He has a salary cap hit of $13 million next year, $13.8 in 2021, and then $13.8. So he's due $13 million essentially in each of the next 3 years.
Oh, they're not paying him that, yeah.
After this year. So I don't know when, like, that's a lot of contract. And for a fairly young player to still consider. And the reason I wanted to bring this up, because you've said this multiple times now, Derek. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey Simmons, let's say hypothetically in a perfect world, he is back into rotation as soon as he's able to be, which is mm-hmm. against the Chargers in Week 7. That gives you 2 games mm-hmm. to evaluate him before the trade deadline. And if the reason I brought this up is, and again, this is radio land, so mm-hmm. we can speculate and we can kind of have fun with this. If you were to see what you need to see out of Jeffrey Simmons, mm-hmm. I'm not saying he's, you know, playing every snap and he's productive yet, but that you see the upside and the potential, all the reasons you drafted him at 19 with the risk of injury. Mm-hmm. You've got 2 games to see what you need to see. Does that dictate to you that maybe you go try to acquire an offensive lineman with some other piece on your team, whether that's Daquan mm-hmm. Jones, whether that's Jarrell Casey, whether, you know, whatever that is. Now, I don't think they can win by trading Jarrell Casey this year.
No.
I don't think they can be a playoff team this year by trading Jarrell Casey. I don't think they get better. Now, if they trade Daquan Jones or somebody else along that front line and it allows them a depth piece along the offensive line that maybe helps because you think you've seen what you need to see out of Jeffrey Simmons, then I could see that being a thing that they do and still getting better this year. So that's the reason I bring that up is that they will have potentially, in a perfect world, a 2-week evaluation of Jeffrey Simmons before the trade deadline, which then allows them to maybe make a move if they want.
But would you trade Casey for an offensive lineman when you might have the 6th man in-house already in Dennis Kelly?
No, I wouldn't make that trade because then you got to work that offensive lineman in. somehow, some way. As long as I got Dennis Kelly and he's healthy, then I figure I'm good. I just need, if worst came to worst, I can insert Dennis Kelly somewhere.
If there's any way he can play left guard, you got to put him in.
So I think he can.
I agree with that. But the reason I would bring this up with Casey is that Casey would net you something along the lines of the Jimmy Graham deal for Max Unger.
Yeah.
Right? Like you trade Jimmy Graham because you can get the best center in the NFL, or one of the best centers in the NFL. If you can trade Jarrell Casey and get one of the best centers in the NFL, all of a sudden he's plugged in. Like, if you can go to Atlanta, again, Alex Mack got hurt against the Titans, so let's take that out of the equation. Let's just say hypothetically you could trade Jarrell Casey and get Alex Mack. Ben Jones slides over to guard, and you feel a lot better about your team because now you've got a premier center. Like, the only reason you would consider it is if you were getting an elite player. Right, like an elite level offensive lineman.
You would have to get somebody to justify, you know, the trade of Jarrell Casey.
Because I don't think you get better otherwise.
Yeah, I don't think they make the move to trade either one of these guys. I think they just play the season out. But I think next year they upgrade their offensive line somehow through the draft again, and they upgrade their defensive line because, you know, but then they're going to have to make a decision, obviously, at quarterback, but I don't see no other position other than maybe defensive back that they have to get some more depth. I just think that because of the money that is owed in the age of these certain players, that the Titans are more inclined to, after this season, move on from both. It doesn't mean, again, people, it doesn't mean that I think Jarrell Casey or Delanie Walker will not continue to be productive in this league if they get traded. I think they will. But looking at it from a business move, I think it would be it's probably best if they kind of move on from both guys, especially with Jarrell Casey's cap hit. Move on from both guys and then let those younger guys start playing. Now, you know, you take a hit from a leadership standpoint because then Logan Ryan, again, what are you going to do with Logan Ryan next year? So you're going to take a huge hit, and then you got Cameron Wake. Are you going to keep him another year? So your veteran guys will be gone, eventually be gone. So you got to take a hit.
I just have a hard time believing that a guy like Jarrell Casey in year 9 of his career, making $13 million starting in 2020, is going to net you something in return on the offensive line that is of the utmost importance to the Titans in return. But that would also really deplete whoever that guy is protecting quarterback for said team. I mean, is anybody going to cut off their nose despite their face?
Right. I don't think someone's going to give up a commodity on the offensive line to get Jarrell Casey.
No, I mean, that's why, again, you'd have to view Casey as a three-year upgrade, right? And maybe you feel better about your backup center. I mean, there's a lot of, like, it's trades that you have to give up something to get something, right? You know, Atlanta's out of it. They could be firing their coach. That could be a piece they could be looking to move, right? Like, that's, again, they're just an example. But if you're considering, and again, the only reason I bring this up is because you could have a 2-week evaluation of Jeffrey Simmons to know what you have a little bit. You could also, and Derek, you're the one kind of saying this, again, not reporting this, but just alluding to that this could happen, that if you're not going to have Casey and Walker next year, if that's in fact a thing, then just like with Yossi, even if he's the captain, you have to consider making a move to get value back for a player that you think you're just going to cut at the end of the year. Now, Yossi's not going to be cut or whatever. Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm just saying, it has to be a part of your shrewd general managing equation. And if there's a possibility that you are going to move on from Jarrell Casey at the end of the year, I don't think that's going to happen. You have said it might happen. If that is even a thought in John Robinson's head, then he needs to kick the tires. Then he needs to go out there and say, all right, what can I find? Only if he feels like Jeffrey Simmons, in this little short window he's got to evaluate him, is clearly the player he drafted.
I think a lot is going to depend on, Jeffrey Simmons and how he plays and what they believe he will be after watching him play. And I think they trust the younger guys that they have on that defensive line that we kind of make fun of because of all the names and the rotations. But I think they feel confident with those guys as long as they have like a Jeffrey Simmons, you know, with them on that defensive line. And I think they...
Oh, imagine how good the defense will be if he's healthy for the last 6 games. Holy cow.
I think, again, they go into next year's draft. And if indeed they do not... If they say, you know what, we're just going to live with Nate Davis and we're going to try to get him to going. If that is indeed the case, because If they move on from Saffold after 1 year, that's malpractice. I mean, someone needs to be fired. If indeed that's the case, if they move on from Saffold after 1 year, someone needs to be fired. Now, I'm not saying who, but I'm saying someone.
Well, I would say this. If this season goes south and they finish 7-9, I would trade Casey and or Walker for draft picks.
And that's what I'm saying. I think they go, I think this year they go again with the defensive line. I think they try to get another stud at defensive line to pair him with Simmons, because I just don't think they bring Jarrell Casey back for that price that he's at. Not to say that Jarrell Casey is, you know, he's done or he's this bad, because he's not. I'm thinking about it from a organizational standpoint. How do I move forward? How do I get younger on that defensive line? Well, how do I get younger? I release a guy, and we've seen it. Guys get released, and you're like, man, why did they release him? Well, salary cap reasons. They want to get younger, and those guys kind of fall in that category. Not to say that they're playing bad, but they do fall in that category of salary cap, and they're getting older. And we say, well, he's only 30. Well, 34 defensive line is getting up there.
With the 18th pick in the 2020 NFL draft, the Titans select center out of the University of Wisconsin, Tyler Bidas, number one center in the draft right now. Just a fantastic offensive line at Wisconsin. I would not be surprised. This is a great offensive line class coming up in 2020, like studs everywhere. I would not be surprised if the Titans are going hard after the best center in the draft if they think
another
he's that
Travis
good.
Frederick.
I mean, that's exactly out of Wisconsin. So he is viewed as the top center. Garrett Bradbury has not had a particularly great start to his rookie campaign. You know, at NC State, the guy that I think went the pick before Jeffrey Simmons. So, again, they've got a great defense, and adding Simmons only makes them even better. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be fantastic to watch. The question is, do you have enough pieces with Dennis Kelly as a backup, maybe sliding around? Can Nate Davis develop? Taylor Lewan certainly will get better as he continues to play more games.
They need to find some way to move up to that 10 spot, probably above that, and get Brown. Man.
Derek Brown?
Yeah, you put Brown and Simmons together.
But that would require you then to move on from Casey. Like,
I think they are, yeah.
Yeah, and you're sticking to it, so.
All right, coming up next, it was a bad performance for Vanderbilt this past weekend in Ole Miss. They lost by 25 points. They've got what should be an easier opponent this week in UNLV. We'll talk to the head coach, Derek Mason, coming up next on Morning Drive. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D. Mace, Marquise. Derek Mason, head coach of Vanderbilt, is going to join us coming up in just a moment as the Commodores are at home this weekend. A 14-point favorite against UNLV. Pair of 1-4 teams going at it. And the Vols, Vandy, of course, coming off that 31-6 loss last week at Ole Miss, which was not pretty.
It's just been disappointing to watch this team. And I know we should have Coach Mason in a minute, but it's just been disappointing to watch this team play, because we thought coming into the season this team would be much better than what we've seen. Now, Georgia, LSU, we knew that were going to be a tough out for that team.
We welcome in the head coach right now, Derek Mason of Vanderbilt. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Just getting to work. Let's go.
All right, let's do it. So we'll get to UNLV in just a moment. The performance last week, though, at Ole Miss was a rough one, 31-6. What did you see on tape this past week that are areas of concern that you need to clean up for this week?
Well, you know, offensively, it started with protection. I mean, it started with, run game and protection. We needed to be stout, inside, and I thought Benito Jones did a good job, versus, our center of being disruptive. You know, when we put, Sean McMoore in, Sean was able to do a much better job, and we were able to get some things going. We had miscues, up front in terms of, run game and or protection. Then we get to the idea of not being very consistent in terms of, throw opportunities and being able to, find targets. And then defensively, solid first half, in terms of being able to stay in that ball game, but poor tackling in the second half, you know, man, let out some big runs. And, you know, when you look at it, I mean, it's all cumulative. I mean, it's a low here, a low there. And, you know, man, all of it leads to, a disappointing performance. But, you know, that's what you see. I mean, there were some incremental wins in there with, you know, man, special teams, you know, man, how we're kicking, how we're punting right now. But we got to find a way to put it all together, and that's what we're doing now.
Now, Coach, I want to kind of move past this game that just happened. Obviously, Riley Neal started off. Deuce Wallace was able to get in there with 16 attempts. My computer went off. 16 attempts. What do you do now as a head coach? Do you look at it and say, okay, I want to get this young guy in more? Or do you go back to Riley Neal and say, okay, let him kind of work through whatever he's working through, and if we do need the younger quarterback, we can go back to him?
Yeah, I think what you just, you know, man, spoke to is really, you know, like the ideal, the situation that's really at hand. We've had to, you know, man, sort of, you know, man, tailor some things down, man, and to try to, you know, man, Riley's got, you know, man, talent, but, you know, man, we've got talented guys around him, and proficiency in the offense is where you need to be. You know, you try to make sure, man, that you can, you know, like, get your quarterback, like, in a position where he's comfortable. But, you know, obviously, you know, when you have some protection issues and or things happening, you know, I mean, it's not always the quarterback's fault. Mm-hmm. But when there's a clean pocket, when there's an opportunity, then you start to look at, okay, you know, man, is he speeding up the footwork? Is he going through the progression? What does it look like? Is he finding the targets? And that's where, you know, man, for us, man, we got to be better. You know, man, what I've seen is this. I mean, what I know is this. You know, if Riley can continue to master what we do, great, man. But if not, then there's other options on the table, because I think Deuce understands, you mean, what we do. He's been in the system. It's just that when you've looked at it and those guys have gone head to head, okay, man, Riley's done a better job. So, you know, with that, I mean, this is the week where we're getting a chance to get, a fair amount of snaps for both, you know, looking at, you know, exactly where we are. Riley, you know, is the starter. Deuce will probably play, fairly early in this ball game, and we'll take a look at exactly what we have.
Coach, you've obviously got great weapons on offense, and we've talked about them for months and months and months now. How do you balance sort of force-feeding those weapons and making sure, almost to a detriment, that you get those guys the football, and then also knowing that they can be decoys and really distract from defenses as well? How do you balance knowing you've got to feed your guys versus, you know, knowing when to back off and go a different direction?
Well, Keyshawn Vaughn's going to get his touches. I mean, we need more plays so he can get more touches, because the more touches he gets, the better we are. You know, I mean, I need him to have, you know, man, anywhere between, you know, man, 20, 22 and 28 touches a ball game. You know, and when you're playing from behind, that's just not the case. So, I mean, we understand what's happening, you know, man, there. I look at, you know, man, Kalijah. You can work to build and get Kalijah in the ball, but we want to give him the ball downfield. I mean, like, in my opinion, you know, I mean, he's one of the best deep threats in this conference, and we've been able to get it to him very, very little, you know, down the field. It's been short passing game, and, you know, some of it has to do with protection, but some of it has to do with, you know, quarterback, footwork, read, timing, because everything's about timing, you know, like, in this offense. And then the other piece, you know, when you start talking about Pinckney, I mean, because of some of the issues, again, with the protections and or, you know, I mean, quarterback going through the progression, It just hasn't worked out the way we needed it to. But that's got to change for us, because the one thing about those three guys, and it's not the big three, but those three guys, okay, man, can make a defense have to play, everybody, because, man, you can get attacked in a run, you can get attacked, you know, in the pass game, you know, out wide, man, or down the field, and then you can open up the middle of the field. And, you know, for reasons that are starting to become apparent to us in terms of progressions and everything else, it hasn't transpired in terms of being able to take care of the middle of the field.
Coach, you're a defensive guy by trade. Jason Tarver, formerly with the Raiders, your defensive coordinator. I noticed, you know, the last couple of weeks, a lot of Vandy fans disappointed on the defensive side of the ball with the amount of points and yards given up. What areas do you need to improve on to make that defense a little more stout?
Well, I mean, it starts with the idea, man, of you know, man, schematically, are we putting guys in the right position? And when you and I believe that, you know, man, that's what we're doing. You know, I stated, you know, man, there are no excuses in this game, but we haven't played with the same, you know, man, rotational linebackers inside, you know, all year. So, you know, like when you don't have, you know, man, a steady rotation of guys playing inside, man, you're not seeing the same thing from week to week. So the cumulative reps that you get, okay, man, the accrued reps that you're getting, okay, man, just aren't there. And granted, you know, when teams are, you know, like giving you multiple looks from counter to power to split zone to, you know, just pure outside zone, you're trying to get those guys to actually stay in their spots, be in their spots, trying to take, you know, what they've learned and trying to apply it. And I think that's been big because when you look at it, our safeties right now are almost our leading tacklers. That's not what you want. You know, I mean, it starts up front. You got to get penetration. But I think, you know, with that, you know, man, we just got to be better at the outside and inside backer positions. And you know, with that said, you know, man, those redshirt freshmen, you know, man, back there, you know, on the back end and, you know, man, have played solid. I mean, I just don't want their tackle quotient to be that high. But you know, we got a lot of things to fix, you know, like in my opinion. I mean, we're working towards it. This week is another opportunity versus UNLV. But we're not going to make excuses, man. We're going to let them play football.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Coach. You talked a little about, you know, the missed tackles and trying to get better in that area. What can you do as a coach? Because once the season gets going, it's kind of hard to kind of work on those things specifically each and every practice because you got a game plan for the team that you're facing that week. But is there anything that you feel you can do or Tarver can do to kind of rectify the tackling problem?
Yeah, I think it goes back to, you know, we weren't talking about tackling early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as we've had to play, you know, man, other guys, as we've had to get a little deeper into the rotation, okay, man, you're talking about guys that haven't had the cumulative reps, you know, man, in terms of what it looks like. So it's on-the-job training,
mm-hmm.
You know, like for those guys. So, you know, when you talk about tackling, I'm asking these guys to be greedy about, you know, man, like seizing the opportunity. You can't take an hour of practice and just go tackling individuals. Mm-hmm. You just can't do it. I mean, there's no time for it. So what you have to do and on every rep in practice is populate to the ball, work same foot, same shoulder, and seize every opportunity that you're attacking ball carriers, whether it's a slice tackle, an angle tackle, a profile tackle. You got to use those, you know, opportunities in practice, even if you're just going palms up to put yourself in a hip position. If you can do that, well, then that's more than enough because that's better than individual because it's game-like reps.
Coach, we always appreciate the time and the insight. Best of luck this week against UNLV, and we'll chat again next Wednesday.
Thank you. Anchor
you got it.
Thanks, Coach.
Coach, yeah. Derek Mason with us.
I feel like that's a locker room right now that mm-hmm. just really needs success.
Yeah.
That's a locker room that needs to find its footing. You get a W against UNLV, you feel very differently from a confidence standpoint going into the last half of the season. That's a group of guys that needs a win pretty badly.
You're absolutely right. I mean, this is a team that coming into the season, they thought that, you know, with Kalijah Pinckney and Keyshawn, that they would have more success doing some things offensively. And it just hadn't been that way. And how do you kind of, you know, get over that? I don't know. But like you said, it starts this week. They need to win desperately. And it might change, you know, the fortune or the outlook at how Vandy approaches games moving forward.
Don't forget, coming up today on ESPN 94.9 Game 2, we've got a pair of NLDS Game 5s, the Braves and the Cardinals today. Coverage starts at 3:30 on 94.9 Game 2, and that'll lead you right into the Nationals and the Dodgers as we get closer and closer to the LCSs.
You're not even interested, man.
The DSs do nothing for me.
This is, but these are games.
DSs.
These are quote-unquote.
Take that how you will.
These are quote-unquote Game 7s. right? These are game fives in the first round are game sevens. Oh. This is winner take all in three series. That's good stuff,
listen,
man.
Tell me when the World Series is at game seven and
you
I watch.
Guys, man. You bums.
Even if it gets to game
seven. Look, you give me
you give me
Braves-Dodgers in the National League. You give me Yankees-Astros. I'm in it for every single game.
Why not Cardinals?
Well, tell me when the Tigers get in the World Series.
Let me take a look at the line. Let me see what some of the numbers are here.
Well, game five's in Atlanta.
I mean, if I gamble on the game today, I'll watch every pitch.
Well, right. That's what you told me earlier. Just put $10 down on all three games so that you'll watch it.
I will.
I'm like you. I love baseball growing up, and I've not watched a lot of baseball this year, but I am now all in because it's playoffs, and it's just fun. It's a different level.
You know what's tough for me, though, is when you have these games, and granted, mm-hmm. we're lucky enough. We do a show where we work, and we're home for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people can't watch an NLDS game that starts at 3:37.
Why did they do that?
Well, it's only because there was a bunch of extra. There's extra games on, like there's three different games.
No, there was four games on Monday. One of those was
a
day game, right?
And that only happens a couple of times. Like it's generally like a 4 o'clock start and a 7 o'clock start.
But you're killing your audience. I mean, it's like you're killing your sport because everyone's at work.
Yeah, no,
or getting off of work.
Trust me, I understand. There's not a way to. First of all, I like younger start times for sports so the kids can watch them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my biggest problem with baseball is, you know, a game that starts at 9 p.m. Eastern time kids can't watch that. If you're a fan of that team, you can't stay up and watch that. So I don't mind a 3:30. You know, you can get home by 4 o'clock to watch your favorite team with your son or your daughter or whatever. Like you can do that if it's just an hour. And then the next game starts at 7, then you get to watch two games instead of trying to – most people don't have two TV setups like you and me, Nick. Most people aren't sick and twisted like that.
All right, coming up next, we will wrap up the first half of the show. A little college football discussion coming off of head coach Derek Mason. A thought for Knoxville. We're back after this. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. A little AC/DC for you. A little rock and roll train. What is this, Darren Donick and Chase?
This should be the halftime show of the Super Bowl.
I wouldn't object. Good stuff.
No, I want to hear Hips Don't Lie and I'm Real with Ja Rule and J-Lo.
Come on, baby, put it on me.
Speaking of putting it on people, Ben Simmons put it on some people last night.
No,
first career three.
We're not talking about this. We are not. Yeah. We are not talking about this.
Yes, we are. Ben
no
Simmons
one cares.
Drained his first three-pointer ever.
No, it didn't. It's a preseason game. Doesn't count.
Well, he drained it.
I checked his numbers just now. He's 0 for 17 from behind the arc all time.
Well, he's 1 for
18. You know, the audacity of this guy to say that doesn't matter and that doesn't count.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
Yet 40 minutes ago,
nobody cares.
He's sitting here talking about Taj Gibson being a factor for the Knicks.
Exactly.
Yeah, are you kidding me?
Not on the radio.
Unbelievable.
That was in private.
The temerity of this man.
In private, I think the Knicks' strategy is better than people think. On the air, James Dolan sucks. All right? Get it right.
I already told you. I already told you guys what to do. Buy James Dolan's album. Let him win a Grammy. He'll quit. He'll sell the Knicks, and then he'll become a big artist. That's all you got to do.
The Knicks could be better than people think this year. But I only say that normally in private. Now you're making me do it on the air. So no one cares about these stupid Ben Simmons preseason threes.
I do.
Clearly, everybody else does.
Love Ben Simmons.
I think he's a hell of a player, but he's 0 for 17 all time in his career from behind the arc.
Which means he's only attempted 17 and within 3 years, which is pretty bad.
Technically, it's only 2 years, really, because he didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But either way, that's not good.
You know what also is not good is the vibe I'm getting for Saturday night in Knoxville, Saturday morning, because it'll be a 12 o'clock central, 12 o'clock Eastern, 11 o'clock Central kick. Joe Moorhead said yesterday, I'm undecided on quarterback, could be Stevens, could be Schrader. Jeremy Pruitt 2 days ago said, Brian Maurer will start if he has a good week of practice. So we're going to have two teams, possibly four quarterbacks. If you're a Vols fan, I would expect an ugly football game on Saturday.
Possibly ugly. I like Tennessee in the points.
Okay.
I think if they play the way they did in the first half against Georgia and they come out like that again against Mississippi State, I think they can win the game, and I think they can look good doing it. I don't think Mississippi State's program is in as good a shape as we thought in the preseason. And, you know, Tommy Stevens gets hurt. He's turning the ball over, so they don't know what they're going to do at quarterback. You know, defensively, they just got torched by Bo Nix. They are not that program is also teetering on the brink as well. So we talked about this in the summer. This is a massive game for two second-year coaches in the SEC to sort of determine the path, that like the narrative around their tenures. if Joe Moorhead goes up there and wins, I think Mississippi State fans feel, okay, you know what, it's a rebuilding year after we lost a bunch of studs on defense and Nick Fitzgerald, and but he's keeping our heads above water. If they go up there and lose, fans in Knoxville are ecstatic about a W finally. But Mississippi State fans are pretty – they're kind of left wondering what to think about their program. So it's a huge game for both coaches. I think Tennessee will play much better than people think. I don't like the point spread there for Mississippi State. I like it if I'm a better, I'm taking the Vols and the points.
If they – like you said, if somehow, some way Pruitt got that team to come out and play inspired football for half, and maybe it was because of the new quarterback, I don't know, but he got that team to play inspired football.
He threw the ball confidently and like with conviction.
Yeah,
it might have cost him in the second half, but he was pretty good in the first half.
But he did. He threw the ball. He didn't hold back. And then eventually Georgia did what Georgia does to many teams, and they just swarm you and like a boa constrictor, this tighten, and then you're dead. That's what happened to the Vols. If they can come out that way, then I think this would be one of those wins that we will look at and say, you know what, this is what this Vol team can be, because it would have been against an SEC opponent. But if he lose this game, then, you know, we are now even more questioning whether Jeremy Pruitt is the guy, because this team, how can you play like that against Georgia in the first half and then come in and lose at home to Mississippi
but
State?
But think about what you just said, though. I think they're going to come out and play inspired football. We're a year and a half into a guy's tenure, and we think that the team will be playing at a level of inspiration that should be obvious every single week. I'm beyond the inspiration point. At the point of like, can I get some execution?
Yeah, I mean, in part of your job as a coach is not to inspire your team to get up every now and then. Mm-hmm. It's to have the team up every single weekend. I mean, that you're absolutely right, Nick. So, but you also have to evaluate. You know, our job is to sort of objectively look at the situation and. Again, let's just say Mississippi State is they're the 50th best team in the country. I think CBS has them at 51. I think Athlon's got them at like in the mid 50s. They're barely a top 50 team, if that. And you're a 6.5-point underdog at home to a team that's barely a top 50 team. That is where this program is. So I think you're right, Nick. It shouldn't be evaluated this way, but this is where the program is. The program is now evaluated on, man, do they play over their heads, and can they be extra motivated and inspired and get up for a game at home against the 51st best team in the nation? I mean, that's where we are, and so it is what it is. You can't do anything about that other than go to work every day, and you know, if that leads to two or three W's in the SEC, I think you'll view this season at least salvageable. Like, you will have salvaged the season if you can beat South Carolina, beat Vanderbilt, you know, beat Mississippi State, and you get three SEC wins. I think you can salvage the year if you're Jeremy Pruitt, and you can say, look, we made progress, we got better, go out and, you know, just absolutely dominate on the recruiting trail, and then come into year three with hopefully some semblance of momentum. That's the best case. That's the best case scenario. Oh, we salvaged the year, and we're going to do good in recruiting. Like, that's the best case scenario for Tennessee fans right now.
Well, Silly Underdogs are back for another week, so if you want to make your picks, just jump on thegamenashville.com or play on the ESPN Game Nashville mobile app today. Make your picks for the three college football underdogs that you think will win outright on this Saturday. Weekly winners will get a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville sporting event or concert. Silly Underdog Picks is brought to you by the Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Real quickly, too, did you guys see The CBS game this week is is Alabama A&M, which Bama's like a 17-point road favorite. I'm surprised CBS, and I guess maybe at the beginning of the year, they thought this would be a better game than Florida-LSU. Florida-LSU is going to be the Herb Street night game on ESPN.
Yeah, does that go ABC or does that go ESPN? Either way.
It's Herb Street, right? The game day people.
Listen, that LSU might be a blowout, too. They're a 14-point favorite, so it's not like one game is necessarily closer. The other one just looks better on paper. I am interested in the Alabama matchup, though, because Kellen Mond can make plays. Alabama's defense has given up chunk yards. A&M's got a decent defensive line. Alabama has struggled to run the football to their standards. So I'd like to see what those two things look like for Alabama. We know Tua and the receiving corps is great. We know that. But how well do they play on defense against Kellen Mond, and how well do they run the football against the solid defensive line for A&M? Those are sort of the two areas that are quote-unquote cracks in the armor for Alabama. That's what I want to keep an eye on this weekend. You're on the road, hostile environment, and those two things could be challenged. How well do you perform in those two areas?
They've just been a disappointment. Texas A&M, a big disappointment. It may be, you know.
Still ranked, by the way.
Yeah, and I've heard you say this, the 2020 is the year that they're looking toward.
Penn State, Texas A&M, and the Natty, baby.
But they just...
Calling it now.
Texas A&M and Penn State.
It's been a disappointment.
2021 National Championships.
Oh, wow. Man.
Fisher and Franklin. Well, could you imagine?
That is real. That is early.
Well, technically it's a 2020 prediction, but the game will happen technically in 2021. I'm just telling you right now.
Penn State.
Yep.
I'm going to start working on a line.
Got some futures for me.
Start setting some numbers
even
here.
Even with Trevor Lawrence still being...
Texas A&M minus 2.5.
Oh, all right. All right. I like it. All right, coming up next, we'll kick off hour number 3. It was a really good night in sports here locally for Tuesday on the ice, on the pitch, and around Major League Baseball. We're back after this on Morning Drive.
Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.